Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before the big interview begins, I want to remind you that we're now producing over 8 hours of advert-free podcasts every month for our socios at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. For just £2.99 per month, you get a weekly magazine show, extra socio-only big interviews, plus documentary specials. And when you sign up, you get instant access to the entire archive. So far, that's Rafa van der Vaart, Ledley King, and Robbie Keane waiting for you right now. Enjoy the show. Yes, well, it had to happen sometime. We were caught by the fuzz. Welcome, in other words, to our big interview with Detective Sergeant Steve Arnett. This was a voluntary chat, and nothing I said was used in evidence against me yet. Line of Duty fans, and there are millions of you, will know all about the waistcoat-wearing detective. But most of you won't know that Martin Compston, the actor who brilliantly plays Arnett in the BBC crime drama, is a former professional footballer, and he trained at that mecca of football. We call it the home of football, Aberdeen. Pittodrie. As a youngster, he was there. We taught him a great deal about his poison charm. So yes, I'm claiming him as a dandy. Martin, anyone who knows him, won't be surprised to know has strong views on how football should be played. We talk about Barcelona's style and the qualities of bravery and technique that he loves in Spanish football, qualities largely missing from the football culture he grew up in as a small, ball-playing centre-half. Listen out for cameos from Paul Scholes, Paul McStay and Henrik Larsson. This is a wee beauty. Enjoy. Probably my all-time comedy heroes are the Marx Brothers. Really nice people, funny people, tremendous story. We're sitting in a Groucho Club. My team's Aberdeen. I'm sitting opposite an all-time dandy's legend. And he's one of Britain's new breed of super cops. DS Steve Arnett, everybody, was a dandy. Martin Compston, welcome to the Groucho Club. Welcome to the big interview. Whoa, this is exciting. You said you're psyched. I'm psyched. Have I made it up that your football education came in my city at Pittodrie? Tell us about it.
Well, just first, thanks for having me. big time fan of the show, and you know we've came to know each other over the last couple of years. And thank you for doing the Lennon interview for the hospice and everything for me. But yeah, delighted. Well, it's not quite football education was Greenock and Morton, but no, I signed with Aberdeen. Youth when I was about probably about 13 or 14, so yeah, I spent most of my years. It was great times. I mean, Aberdeen had a fantastic youth system. I'm not sure as much as I like, but they spent my summers up there, spent my October holidays up there. I was under Roy Aitken at the time, and they were great at letting the young boys sort of mix with the first team. So I mean, by the end of probably most training days, we all had just a big game. So by 13 or 14, you were having a kickabout with Joe Miller and Theo Snelders and Ian Jess, and hey, well, yeah, he wasn't doing much running, but Dean Windass and all those kind of characters.
Yes, listeners, I am drooling. Yes, I am.
But I really liked it, and so it was a load of our boys, because they were sort of set up into different areas, and we did most of our weekday training at Bothwell, mm-hmm. All the West Coast boys, and then for holidays we would we'd go up to Aberdeen.
How, who spotted you? How were you spotted? And when they saw you, aged 12, 13, yeah. what did they see in you?
I think, if I remember right, the scout's name was Peter Brain, and my local team before, I mean, because on and off, I've sort of been with Morton through Boys Club, Morton Youth, for nearly 10 years, and we had a great run, the Boys Club, that year to the Scottish Cup final, where we lost to Celtic. And from what I'm told, the boys are quite adamant that young Darren Fletcher was on the opposing side.
But hello, guest. Well,
yeah, yeah. And I played against Darren a couple of times, just because we're same age and we were sort of like district trials and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it was a great time actually. We came up against some really good teams in that run. But all these bigger clubs were recruiting from all over Scotland, and sort of Celtic as well, I think, had boys from Ireland and stuff. And we were just 11 boys, you know, all literally just pals. And the only thing that really beat us that day is because we had a great run, but I mean, most of us were all Celtic fans, and when the McStays and stuff are on the sidelines and they come out wearing the hoops and all that kind of thing, you know, we were sort of beaten before the game began.
So Aberdeen picked you up. I genuinely would like to know what was that you did well. Because I'm asking because I'm going to get to a remark you made to me later on when you start listening to the interview.
There was a funny thing. This shows you how long ago it was. I was a sweeper. I could read the game very well, and I was very well known for Tories for taking chances, or what I would say, just playing out from the back.
Yeah,
you know, I love to get on the ball, and most strikers are absolutely clueless when it comes to making a tackle, and so you could read them very easily which way they were going. And I always kind of something I've always been quite bitter about is a lot of my managers always going, and again, hopefully our game's changing, especially with the way Barca and stuff play, and people become more educated. It was always you're going to get caught one day. I'm like, well, what about the last three seasons or something I played and I haven't been caught? And I don't think I ever did get caught. And it ends up, I mean, obviously, going up to a higher level, I probably would have. But we just had this mentality that when we're getting screamed at for passing the ball in the box. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, if somebody's there and they're capable on the ball, why not?
So I'm a lot older than you, but I remember the rules were, and you were screamed at, never pass across your box, ever.
Yeah.
And that what we've begun to recognise as a curse of developmental football, the lump it, kick it, all that. I think that we've exposed that generally across the country. We know that. Where did that instinct come from you? Evidently nobody taught you that you could play from the back. Is it inherent?
Well, because I probably started higher up the pitch. So I kind of had that thought I was a bit more player, but it turned out I was actually pretty good at reading the game. So I ended up at the back anyway. So playing, I just thought I could get on the ball a bit. I mean, but where we grew up as well, I mean, I've heard this talked about quite a lot in previous podcasts, but it's some street football, you know, so we could all play in concrete. But growing up, all we mainly played on was ash pitches, you know, and it wasn't conducive to
for anybody who hasn't played on them or seen them, which there will be, describe that.
It's basically just stones, you know, that's the best way I can say it. It's just, and trying to play any kind of football on that, it's really impossible. And it's what is incredibly annoying is when I was lucky where I grew up. I grew up in a place called the Valley, and all the houses were around this one big field. So we had a big grass pitch to kind of play on, me and my pals every day after school. But in terms of the facilities for young boys, all we did is play football. And all weekend we were on these terrible ash pitches, but what they thought was they were all weather pitches. And then now you see these kids, and they've got these beautiful 3G and 4G parts, and they're just lying empty.
There's nobody there.
No, there's nobody there. And it's just, you think, what I wouldn't have done to have them when I was a boy. Because the first after part we got, and they thought it was state of the art, and it was just pure flat. And in the winter, it was like an ice rink.
Yeah.
You know, people were getting serious injuries slipping on the thing. But no, I mean, I suppose being a young boy growing up in Scotland, I mean, again, I don't know if times are changing. It was what you did every single day. You know, and where I actually, a lot of my pals, we had a really good standard, I think, within my school team. There was 7 or 8 of us all on S forms, and I think 4 of us went pro, and 2 of my close pals went on to have really good careers. Sean Dillon was Young Player of the Month in the Scottish League, and I got Young Player of the Year for Kilmarnock. Gary Harkins was captain of Dundee, went on, won the League Cup with Kilmarnock. So we had a really good bunch of boys, we were all pals, and we could all play a bit.
At that age, who did you watch that played the way you liked?
Well, I mean, I'm Celtic daft, but I grew up, and this is why I'm absolutely loving it at the minute. I grew up at a time the club was in disarray, you know. I mean, I was born in 84, so probably like 89, 90 is when you start kind of knowing what football is and that, and it was like the worst period in Celtic's history. But Paul McStay in the middle of that pitch was just sheer and utter class. You know, his range of passing and just the way he played the game, you know. So Paul McStay and John Collins were sort of the two sort of rays of light for as a Celtic fan. Alongside Tommy Burns, Paul McStay epitomises what we believe it is to be Celtic. Just the way he carries himself, you know, the way he's through and through about the club and the way he played the game. Because he could have went on to a far higher level. Far higher level. And it was heartbreaking. I will never forget. I mean, this is how far we've come. I remember our first kind of trophy I can remember as being up for was the League Cup final when Rovers beat us. Mm-hmm. And McStay missed the penalty. Mm-hmm. And I remember being more heartbroken for him because you could just see it in his face. And luckily, later on that year, we beat Airdrie in the Scottish Cup final. But again, that just shows you how far the club's come in that space of time.
Can you believe the previous guest was Walter Smith, and Walter was with Andy Roxburgh, the coach of a Scotland side that became European champions. The only Scotland side that's ever been champions of Europe. Paul McStay played in it. That side is forgotten. Nobody talks about it, nobody writes about it, whereas we're a nation that is super proud of just about anything, except when we actually do achieve something. And I think that links with, I've never found that Paul McStay is, maybe outside Celtic, appreciated or liked or talked about as a great. At the time, he had to cope with a lot of people talking about, a Ray Wilkins argument kind of only goes sideward, doesn't it? What is it that we lack about appreciation about him, his type of player, and also that side that maybe about 2 years before you were born, but we were champions of Europe and it's just been discarded.
I don't know.
Why are we like that?
We're kind of country at times that we like to big up the underdog and we're all for the underdog, but as soon as somebody achieves anything, we're kind of trying to knock them down. And I don't understand why, because I listened to that podcast actually and I couldn't believe that. I'd never heard of it. I mean, I've heard of the World Cup final team, but maybe that's what I'm saying.
They went on from that to play in the World Cup.
But I'd never heard of us winning that. And again, it's bizarre that that's never been spoken about. But yeah, maybe I'm the only reason that I can't maybe relate to that is because being a Celtic fan, he is loved. I mean, he's the maestro. He's loved within the club. And I mean, I've been brought up in his goals and his passing and stuff. So
calm on the ball, like you said you were sweeping at the back.
Just that sense of pure order. Pure relaxed. And I said, two-footed when he wanted to be as well. He can get a goal, you know.
Newsflash. In an age of fake news, yours is not. Darren Fletcher, legend. Yes, we're the same age. We would have played in that final.
Right.
Line of duty is flying. Well, Mrs. Fletcher loves it.
Well, I feel a lot better now that they pumped us. Darren was playing because that was one of the legends that grew around the
game. It wasn't fake news.
Good.
I remember getting awfully excited. There's this fella from LA texting me, DMing me. And if I remember correctly, when you're out walking the dog, one of the things you picked up on what you were watching in Barcelona was this proof that it's ability and reading and vision, not height and power.
Aye.
Did that bring an end to the Aberdeen thing?
No, it didn't. Aberdeen were great at that, because it's one thing, again, that we're still not. I remember I was signed with Aberdeen at the time and the big fella's passed away and he was a lovely man, so I'll not think his name, but the guy who was picking our district team, I was signed with Aberdeen. And to get out of school, I took a big lovely lad with Michael Brilley, who'd never kicked a ball in his life, but he was massive and he just wanted to get out of school, so he came with us. And in our trial, we won 5-0. I scored 2 from sweeper and I didn't make it to the final selection. And Michael, who had never kicked a ball before, got picked for it
because
he was a mammoth. And it was just, it was like you felt like you were in the dark ages sometime. The comparisons with our game to Barca are hard because they have that sort of innate ability. But we're never going to get there if we don't strive, you know. And I think something that really bothers me recently is, again, we've got to be aware of our limitations in terms of just the ability. But the way Northern Ireland are going about it, and Iceland are going about it, I don't understand how we're not achieving those sort of things. And, I mean, I've never been to a major tournament. I was 14 in 98, and I thought, oh, this is going to be it.
Yeah.
And I've been desperate to go to one since. And I remember that the Poland game at the last one. And I went to Dublin, actually, for the Scotland-Ireland game. And Ireland were there for the taking that day. Mm-hmm. And we didn't. And so many times over the last couple of seasons. And that Poland game, I think it was Lewandowski with the free kick. Mm-hmm. It was schoolboy stuff, but it was a 92nd minute. And before it was even hit, you went, this is going to go in. Just defend, be big, be brave, be strong. And it happens all the time, whether it be rugby or whatever. I think Andy Murray's the only one kind of breaking the mould. Even then, now and again, you'd think sometimes he's been, what he's achieved is legendary. But you're thinking sometimes in those finals, he could be up in five or six titles. But I remember what was it, Scotland versus Australia a couple of years ago in the Rugby World Cup. And the reason I say this, and it might sound harsh, is because nobody will know more what I'm saying than the boys on that park. Mm-hmm. They'll know it was there for the taking. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of this sort of glorious loser tag we now, for some reason, seem to revel in. It's, we need to get rid of it.
You're into quite deep sort of social territory there, right? Because you, in some way, we're saying that there's not only a national character, but that it repeats over the generations. Yeah. Jamie Murray and his brother is another one who's excluded from it. Yeah. He's a fan. And have you any idea why we're like that? Well, you've identified it. You've said what it is. We both agree that it happens repeatedly.
Because we accept it. I mean, again, it was the couple of ones I remember was when we had Italy at home, and that was it was under Big Eck, and it was a great campaign.
Yeah, it was.
But again, they had the writing all over it that we knew it was going to happen, and we kind of seem, again, instead of saying we should have qualified, we feel as if we always feel hard done by.
But on that night, I mean, okay, I don't want to take this down the wrong road. On that night, the Spanish referee gives a foul.
Aye.
I think Panucci either commits a foul and it gets given to them. That was one of the worst decisions I've ever seen in my life.
But I think right as well was Ferguson's goal not offside. Barry, so I mean, these things come around.
Even
I think we kind of, I mean, we'll take it all day long, but these things happen both sides. We always seem to be remembering the moments that went against us instead of just being bigger, being brave. I mean, like watching that Iceland team was a breath of fresh air. And the way, I mean, sorry for a lot of your listeners, but the way they beat England was just amazing to watch. And it was just the way, they're just a team. They do the right things right. They defend properly and they run their arses off for each other. You know, they're there for each other. And again, I keep saying this word, and I know it's easy to say this sitting from an armchair watching it, but being brave.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, the way you're speaking, and we've talked about football before, and it helps that we agree, that we like the same things. If you've set aside your career and what it's done for you and the enjoyment, did you ever think, like, I could teach this? I could coach?
I probably... I mean, because I do love it, but I think we're from a different generation. I don't think what I'm saying... I think it resonates with a lot of people because maybe it's Sky Sports and BT. We're watching a lot more. We're able to watch, you know, foreign thingies and just the way people keep the ball and stuff. But I mean, I love them dearly, but I kind of watch a game of football with my dad. You know, they're just shouting at TV, and then still at Celtic games and stuff, you know, some of the old boys, they're just shouting absolute nonsense. And you've just got to kind of black it out. I mean, I believe I said it to you before, like, the angriest I've ever been at Celtic Park was seeing Neil Lennon getting booed for keeping the ball, for passing it back. And it was driving me mad. I mean, we're in the Champions League, and because he passed it sideways, I think, people were going off their nut.
Okay, there's a drinking game that gets played by people who are indicating that occasionally I repeat themes. Okay, very clever, well spotted, okay. Gives you a chance to drink. But that's not unique to us. It's something that horrifies us, and it's been proven subsequently that it's just infantile to think like that.
Yeah.
But Charlie Rexach, who played with Cruyff and coached with Cruyff, said that when they took over in 1988, the Camp Nou was like Parkhead that day.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Not getting the ball in the box quickly.
Yeah.
When there's nobody there, why have you turned back and started again? That's just nonsense. Get it up the park. That was the Camp Nou. That was a philosophy that now anybody who held it would be ashamed of, embarrassed. They would hide that past as if they were, the Wiesenthals were after them. So it's not unique to us. And they changed. Mm-hmm. You know, they had that embedded, and Cruyff changed them. So, okay, they were dealing with a maestro. But what I'm arguing is that you can take that mentality, shred it, learn, teach youth, teach coaches, teach journalists to speak and think and analyse differently.
Well, I think Brendan Rodgers has been huge for us up home. But I mean, what he's achieved this season has been incredible. And what the mind-blowing thing for me is the players who were there last year are like all new signings. Bruni's been a revelation. He's played the best. I think he's Scott Brown's and probably the best season of his career. Stuart Armstrong, Callum McGregor, Craig Gordon, Boyata, all these players who were already there have just went up 10, 20, 30%. I had the privilege the other night, actually, when he won an award back home in Scotland, and he presented it with me, and I said to him, I think it was the Man City game in the Champions League this year, and I think what people forget when that 3-each game, Man City had won 10 on the bounce.
They were flying.
They were absolutely flying.
Yeah.
I said to him, it's the first time I've ever got out of my seat watching my team defend. Because they were just getting after him, hunting in packs. You know, it was compact. It was brilliant to watch. And he speaks to the fans and says, especially, I was at the game at the weekend playing Hearts, and they've got all 10 men squared right in the centre of pitches. I don't care who you are. I mean, maybe you're messed up. That's hard to break down. You have to have patience, you know. Yeah. You have to keep the ball and draw them out and back in. It's not easy.
And not make errors, not give it away, not let them break and then get one. And
he's educated fans about that. He's said to people, he's come out and says, you need to be patient. And I think people have responded. Fans have definitely responded. They're a lot more patient at Parkhead, I think, now knowing what he's trying to achieve. And there'll be obviously these things change, but right now, you know, what I think he's doing, not just for us, but for the Scottish game. And what I think people forget about Brendan. I mean, he came closer than Benitez or Klopp has came to winning that league. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a Scottish, I mean, he was a ball hair away from it. Mm-hmm. You know, he really, that slip's kind of cost him. And he's lost Suarez the next season or anything. But the way his team's played at Swansea, you know, I think he's been fantastic for the Scottish game. And hopefully, with the run we've been on, the gauntlet's laid down. And then you hope that other teams rise to the challenge, because they need to, the rest of Scotland, teams will need to raise their game to compete.
I think it's absolutely right. I think that you learn by seeing, you learn by other people taking the risks that you might be afraid to make, whether you're a director of football or a president or a player or a scout. Mm-hmm. I think you can change mentalities, and it's one of the dreams I've had that Sky's investment of 21 years of Spanish football will have disseminated, will have sent little ripples through youth clubs or schools or wherever I go, speaking to the professionals in the game, which I was doing last night. I don't want to rant on about Barcelona, but this is about the Spanish footballing mentality, which I think is akin to basketball. You use, you circulate, you trick, you pull, you look for. I believe that there'll come a stage, and I believe that there are youngsters coming through now at United, at Chelsea, maybe it'll be in your club, hopefully it'll be in mine, who want to practice to play the game the way that you've talked about, the way that we like watching.
Yeah.
So that little ripple thing may be happening as a consequence of Brendan.
But it's hard with these things as well because, as I say, Barca's definitely showed the way, but it's these players, Iniesta and Xavi, and even like players like Scholes, who's as well my height. I played a charity game against Scholes, and on one of his first touches, he took a bit of heavy touch and I nearly got off him. And his second touch, he took a bit of heavy one again, I nearly got it, and it took me the fourth time to figure out he's done it to me every time. And just drawing me in, and me going, oh, and then he just round me, and then in the last one he nutmegged me for a laugh, I think, and went away. So it's these guys, I kind of left football because I was never going to get where I wanted to be. I think being...
That was an active choice.
Well, the thing is, I was a sweeper, and I felt very comfortable in any kind of circumstance playing sweeper, but sweeper was dying out, and I think the way I played and sort of being a bit of a short arse, you know, I'm a bit of an ankle biter, you know, I like a challenge. And so everybody thought, including me, the move up to holding midfielder would be seamless. Now, I was good at it, but I was nowhere near as good as I was as a sweeper for reasons I don't know. But getting there, you know, I then realised with playing at Morton stuff, that was probably the highest I was going to get. So that made the choice a lot easier when I had another year at Morton or pursuing the acting. That I went for the acting, but what's sick, what I was getting back to it, is that I've now played in all these places that I dreamed of. I'm about to play at Parkhead for the third time. I've played at Old Trafford, I've played at Stamford Bridge, I've played at Wembley, in some ways it does feel a bit perverse that I'm running out in all these grounds in front of these massive crowds and playing with my heroes, you know. I mean, I've been very lucky with my job that I've met some true legends, and I mean proper legends, you know, like John Connery, Michael Caine, Robert Redford, like royally. But the only time I've ever, I was shaking when I met Henry Larson. I couldn't speak to him. I could not speak to him. And I was sitting beside him in the dressing room, and I actually think I'm going to meet him again, and I hope I can explain to him, like, I wasn't, because people, I don't, you know what people are thinking.
That's more about arrogant, me than I showed the last
thinking
time.
You're like an arrogant prick or something because you're not talking. But I couldn't function around him.
I think for all of us, let's say Scots are proud of a man of achievement, your achievements, and I think I've explained to you that because I live abroad, I hadn't been aware of line of duties emergence. When it came out, I hadn't seen the pre-publicity. When it came out, there's a what a good actor that is. Yeah. And you were English, as far as I was concerned, literally. And that must be given to you an awful lot. But we're proud of Scots who achieve. And I think that it'll be pleasant for people who would be daunted meeting you and thrown by this famous guy, and we'll come on to a line of duty in a minute about the level of fame you said has gone off the scale with the last series. It'll be nice for them to know that even the greats get a bit daunted around their heroes.
Yeah,
too.
Well, because I mean, it's I suppose it goes both ways. I think when you meet them, they all get a bit kind of flipping out about if they're watching TV. But yeah, I mean, especially sports stars. But if you're a football fan, you know, and as I was going back to earlier, when I kind of grew up, myself, it wasn't their best time. But then when the O'Neill era arrived and this team just kind of blew away everything before them, and I'd never seen Edinburgh, and we had the new stadium, and before that, I mean, like being at Hampden and stuff, it was miserable, you know. And I was called a Jonah after my first couple of games in the old jungle. I was a boy, and I remember we got beat by Motherwell after Carol Muggleton dropped the ball and Dougie Arnott scored, and then we got beat by Dundee United, Wayne Biggins missing a sitter, and I was thinking, how the hell do you think I'm unlucky? It's the team at Pish, you know? And I remember being in school singing Sack the Board at primary school assembly, you know? And then this new era arrived with this new stadium, and you got Henrik Larsson with his dreadlocks, and it was something I'd never experienced before. And maybe somebody like Dembele at the minute's got a shot, but what is incredible, what we got at Larsson, we got his best years. He was genuine world class. What he went on to win the European Cup with Barca after us, win the league with Man United, but we had him at his very best. And to see him at full flight was magnificent. It really was. And I was behind the goal for the, I was in the Jock Stein stand, which is the way Celtic shoot in the second half. And so I was directly facing that incredible goal he scored against Rangers in 16, where he took it down, he's nutmeg Quantum and Chick Clawson, and it was just pure poetry in motion, you know. And we're not very well renowned in the west of Scotland for being the most open with our feelings, but we're sitting there with your big brother, and you know, you're just on the verge of tears of happiness, you know. The same actually, I was with my brother when we beat Barcelona 2-1, and just that night, it was magical.
Isn't football strange? We've talked about people's misapprehension of you, your regional guy picking the big fella, not you. You look back now, don't you think it's just amazing that Feyenoord have him and they're playing him in midfield. They have no clue what they've got. They've gone to war with him about whether he can go when his contract. He had the most unbelievable misuse of reserve. Happy for your club, great, super, but how can you possibly have a winner like that, a mentality like that, a footballer like that, and misuse it?
So I think a lot of it's got to be with surroundings as well. I mean, even in little bits I've went around it, I mean, even in acting, put it that term, I've never been in little bits of played football. If you're not happy, it affects everything in your life. If you're in a place that doesn't comfortable, you're not surrounded by people who want the same things as you and that stuff, you know, I did something, actually it was a really good job, but I've been stuck in, where was the last one I was at? I was in Bucharest, or outside the middle in Romania, in a cave at 5 a.m, freezing your arse off, and it's hard to produce your best work when, you know, when you're in that situation. But I think what he realised, and I think what Brendan Rodgers has sort of realised in a minute, is we're a massive club when you're up, obviously money-wise we can't compete, but the support we have, we're wide, and you're idolised. He'll be a god forever then up there. You know, you feel players who go on, and I think more than a few people want. Obviously, people want to test themselves about the best, but there'll be a few players who have went down south and just, I think, they've realised what they're missing up north now. You know, just in terms of the size of the club.
I remember when he came and he learned the system at Boswell, it was incredible because Eto'o wouldn't give him the ball originally.
Yeah.
And he made the runs because I'm Henrik. He was doing the right runs,
yeah.
But he just knew that when his previous club, I make the run, the ball comes to me.
Yeah.
And at Boswell, it wasn't like that for two reasons. Eto'o was jealous and held the ball and said, no, I'm not having you in my team, which happens in football. And the system said, you're not getting it when you run. The system get Xavi and maybe it was Edmilson or Iniesta. Would be, now, you, Deco, you get the ball when we say it's right.
Yeah.
So he had to relearn that and he did. And when he began to make an impact on the camp, I remember it was sort of goosebumps because that was at a time when Ronaldinho was idolised. Mm-hmm. The club called him the rock and roll signing, and that's what it felt like too. Mm-hmm. Yet Larsson was getting, at the camp now, in a brief time of being there, bigger roars if he came off in the 70th minute, coming on. Just unbelievable. You talked about feelings. The Catalans are not ones, well, you know,
you spent some time
in Catalonia. Well, you know yourself, they're a little bit spiky as personalities.
The Catalans, what I remember bizarre, what I always remember that time, I always remember after that game, that famous interview with Henri going, I didn't see Ronaldinho, I didn't see it was Henrik Larsson. Because he did, he changed the game with them two incredible little passes. Yes. And there was another one, actually, he was right through. And I think it was Ronaldinho, and we were all screaming at the telly for him to pass it. But yes, see, I believe I've told you before, I spent a lot of time, because I used to live on and off in Girona, near Barcelona. And they're fierce people.
He cracked their emotions.
Yeah. I was one of my favourite memories. I watched the second Barca Man United final in the square in Barcelona, and there was 100,000 people in the street and just up in these massive screens, and you just felt like you're watching history that night. I mean, in Man United had a good side.
Yeah.
Barca absolutely destroyed them playing this. Actually, it was in Alex Ferguson's book, I remember reading, he talks about this carousel thing. You can just see it. The Man United players are getting dizzy, you know, chasing the ball. It was football at its purest form. It was perfect.
That superiority of numbers where if Messi drops back and you haven't anticipated it, or you haven't got a man tracking him all the time, it's 3v2 or 4v3. Yeah. And if you allow those players one man extra, it's just good night.
But that was one of my favourite things as well. Like when we beat them, I remember beating my brother because they absolutely pummeled us that night. Mm. And Fraser first. But there is, I mean, again, because I'm a Celtic fan, but there is something special about a Champions League night at Park. Yeah. You do feel like anything can happen. I remember we were 1-0 up, and you're thinking, you're just waiting on them breaking through, and it went on, and it went on, and it went on. I think it got to like the 80th minute or something, and we went, we might get a draw at this. Mm. We want to think we're going to win. Mm. We're thinking, we might get a draw at this. Mm. And then I think it was Xavi, it slipped. And Tony Watts
takes a little swipe at it.
Tony Watts,
he's a McGonagall,
bombed right through. And I remember, like, because we're watching it, like, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? Yeah. And then just, what a cool finish for the boy.
Mm.
And then after it, I remember, because I thought I read the day before, I'm sure I read the day before, Messi just had a kid and he hadn't scored the night before, so he had the dummy in his sock that he was going to pull out and thingy, and he scored, but it was like the 93rd minute or something, and he went for it. I was watching him, but he went for it, and anything, he thought better of it. So it was a good feeling going out. We halted Messi's celebration.
You've left a little lot behind at Girona because your old club's going up this season, I think.
Aye.
That will be a thing.
That would be
Real Madrid turning up at Girona. Aleti turning up at Girona.
It's a beautiful city and lovely, lovely people. But again, I was out there with the girl I was seeing, but I found it bizarre because I was very keen to learn Spanish.
Uh-huh.
But they wouldn't speak Spanish to you. It was Catalonian or
more than Barcelona, that's Catalan heartland. Yeah.
What a gorgeous city, really, really lovely people. I had a great time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this free podcast. I'm betting you did. If you want to hear more, not just these interviews, but weekly magazine shows and documentary specials, we'd all love you to become socios of The Big Interview. I promise you, I won't let you down. It's worth it. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter and join for just £2.99 per month. You'll get instant access to our entire archive of podcasts, plus 8 hours of new and advert-free content every single month. Think about this. You'll also be helping us to produce more of these shows. Thank you for listening. We love having you there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.